All right, we're recording now. Welcome. Finally, 2 years later.
Hey, Stephen. I know.
Joe, you're on the Charity Charge podcast, our show. We haven't really...
Really happy to be here.
Yeah, I think it was legitimately, I think it was almost exactly 2 years ago that I came on your podcast, Calls Talk Radio, mm-hmm. and you encouraged me to consider starting a podcast. So it only took me 2 years to really get back.
Hey, the important thing is that you did it, right?
Yeah, I think that, no, and we took, and we're always trying to mess around. I just hit a button here, so it's kind of funny as we bear with me here. We're going. Well, I think that a lot of what I'm hoping we're going to talk about today actually has been your experience just with adapting, right, and what you're seeing with COVID-19, because when we started this, my whole thought process was high production quality, and I built out a studio at our office in Austin. Was able to, you know, had a friend at the time that actually worked at Guitar Center, so he got us gear for really cheap. So I mean, all in, we spent a couple hundred bucks getting a mixer and some good mics and whatnot.
That's good. Yeah,
everything in person. Obviously, what's happened with COVID has changed how we can host people. But it's opened up my eyes to the fact that we can just hop on something like this and chat. You know, you're up outside of the Boston area and I'm down here.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting because I think people have become much more forgiving because I started this Zoom online video experience with people. And, you know, I have to have a clean shirt on and stuff like that, you know. I'm still maintaining the clean shirt, but, you know, I don't worry so much about, like, the background stuff in terms of, you know, the dog barking or something like that. Or, you know, a lot of times you hear kids, people with young kids, you're hearing the kids. And so, you know, you just have to kind of roll with it, right?
Well, I think so. And we'll even find out with here. I mean, I think that there's – we might be cutting out a little bit. And if so, we can readjust. But, you know – I wanted to reconnect with you on a number of levels. Number one, I get your newsletter, and I consider myself a friend and a part of the Selfish Giving community.
Absolutely.
I've been doing for a long time now. How many years have you been running that?
Well, you know, I have been running a newsletter in some form, Stephen, since probably 2007, right? It's only been the past few years, though, that I've done the kind of curated newsletter that I do now that you see in kind of the current form. So I've always been a big believer in email marketing and I've done it for a long time. I actually did it for years with Constant Contact before I switched to ConvertKit. But yeah, I've been doing it for years and the current form is probably 3 or 4 years old.
I love your format because I really sincerely look for, you know, this is my podcast so I can have whoever I want it or not. You know, and there's where the advertiser, so to speak, at Charity Charge. So when I say these things, it's with the utmost authenticity that I find it super helpful. Like you're out there, I look at you as the leader and at the forefront of what's happening with respect to cause marketing.
Thank you.
Nonprofits as well. And like, you're always showing how that obviously blends in on the corporate side and the nonprofit side, and where we meet in the middle. So thank you, first and foremost. I mean, I really get a lot out of it.
No, it's a lot of fun. And you know what it is, too? It's interesting because doing a curated newsletter isn't easy because you have to really work through so much material every week, right? In terms of what you need to read and what you need to look at. But I'm a voracious learner. And I'm a really curious person. So it really fits well with my personality. So I see things all the time and I'm like, hey, you know, this is really interesting. I want to share this with people, right? And this was my whole impetus really to start Selfish Giving. And then, you know, it really germinated with the newsletter because I wanted people to not have to remember to visit my site, but to actually do the newsletter. And it's kind of interesting, Stephen, because now I think of myself as much more as in, you know, a kind of an email entrepreneur as opposed to a blogging entrepreneur. I'm not writing a blog so I can email it. I'm emailing what I blog. Right. So in my mind, email comes first now.
That's really interesting. We've been trying to figure out how to make our newsletter better, for lack of any nicer way to say it. And I forwarded yours along to an intern we have this summer that's helping compile it. And I basically said, can we do what Joe does, but do it for our brand and our, you know, what our area.
That's right.
Because it's really good. I want to jump in, you know, for those of the people that are listening on, Joe is, in my opinion, hands down, one of the top experts in the country on the topic of social entrepreneurship, CSR, you know, corporate social responsibility. And you've really dedicated your life, especially over the past, you know, X number of years, we're talking about with Selfish Giving, of really being at the forefront of what's going on. I know that you give speeches and talks on during non-COVID times around the country. I know you've been teaching a course or involved with Georgetown University.
Yep.
What did I not cover? You know, just if you want to share the background in this space.
Well, you know, the big thing with me is I spent almost my entire career in the nonprofit sector, working at a variety of different nonprofits, ranging from, you know, I started my career at the Muscular Dystrophy Association. I worked at the Arthritis Foundation. I worked at the Greater Boston Chamber of Commerce. I worked for public television for a little while. But I spent most of my time at Boston Medical Center, which is the largest safety net hospital here in New England. And it was there that I really started writing Selfish Giving, because I wanted to share what we were doing at BMC in developing our own corporate partnership and our own social media program at the time. So, you know, that was really the impetus for me to really start Selfish Giving and get it going. And since then, it's, you know, and it really does reflect too, Stephen, and you know this too, the importance of doing something consistently. I don't think that is more important than quality, but I do think that is on par with quality, that you need to do something consistently. And the reason why a lot of people don't see traction on what they're doing is because they're not considering the, you know, committing themselves to a consistent schedule. And that's something that I've always been, you know, really good with. And I always like to think my quality is good, but I think my consistency is even better.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty incredible. I mean, when I think about how also we're talking about the newsletter right now, as you're talking about, is your main way of getting across your thoughts, ideas, insights, everything that you're seeing as it's evolving week to week in the cause marketing world. It's very in-depth and there's no newsletter is a slouch, I would say that. So your standards are, but there's a lot of newsletters, obviously, that I get that are just kind of extremely spammy, or extremely lightweight, no consistency week to week. And you know that. I'd like to shift though to ask you some questions, just based since you have a lot of breadth, a lot of experience in the nonprofit and the cause marketing world. In your mind, like just kind of painting a picture to get started with it, what started all of this concept of cause marketing? Or even take me back. I was born in 1986.
Yes. Okay. Right.
What was going on in the, let's say, mid to late 90s? What was cause marketing known as? What existed out there? And just kind of take us through a history of how it's transitioned.
Yeah.
Maybe how it's become more a part of how nonprofits and companies think.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting too that the foundation and the genesis of cause marketing, even though we attribute a lot to the beginning, what we call kind of the Columbus moment of cause marketing is in 1983 when the American Express did a special campaign to benefit the Statue of Liberty Foundation, where they donated a penny every time someone used their card, and they actually raised millions of dollars. Right. That was 83.
That I should know.
Yeah, so that was 83. But here's the interesting thing. Bruce Birch, who was with the March of Dimes during the 70s, was actually working on cause marketing campaigns. We consider him in many ways to be the father or the grandfather of cause marketing, right? Because he was doing it in the 70s, not to the renown. And, you know, it's kind of like saying Columbus discovered America, but knowing the Vikings were there first. Bruce is a Viking. Right. You know, in the sense he was doing campaigns already, he was getting exposure, he was raising money, but not to the level of the American Express campaign in 1983, which was really a watershed moment. But one of the things I always like to point out, Stephen, is cause marketing really began during the 60s and 70s with the Jerry Lewis telethon, because that is where you really had someone who was thinking about, you know, win-win partnerships, right? You know, on TV, right? You know, they would raise money for Jerry's kids that come on TV. I mean, it was definitely a form of cause marketing. And I don't think we can really say enough about how much Jerry Lewis really contributed to the development of nonprofit and corporate partnerships. But generally, it's attributed to 1983 with the American Express campaign. It certainly grew within that time during the 80s and 90s, and we saw a lot of iconic campaigns during that period. You know, and a big leader during that time and continues to be a big leader is Carol Cohn. You know, at the time, Cohn Communications was very much at the forefront of nonprofit, for-profit partnerships. So that made a big deal.
Yeah, I reconnected with her about 6 weeks ago. On something specific related to a foundation that she was helping out. And interesting that you also bring up her name, because again, I mean, she really crafted that. I'm working on getting my tripod a little straighter here. But she really crafted, as I know, Cohn Communications throughout the 80s, as you talk about.
Yep.
When you look at it now and you see the state of cause marketing, basically what I mean for people that are listening that aren't familiar with any of these, you know, just words that we're throwing in here, it's just this idea of how companies and nonprofits can work together, but how they can also, you know, create a charitable element to their business model that ultimately gives back, but drives, you know, their own, whatever those metrics are that the business is looking for, whether it's sales or engagement or some other thing.
That's right. That's right.
We see it all around ourselves, right? With different stuff. And then you talk about like the American Express in the 83. You know, you're pointing that as a seminal moment. I mean, why did it take so long? I guess I'm wondering, because now it's everywhere. Like you can't, almost, so we're going to get into that of like, now, like really strategies and what's seen as like greenwashing. Yep. But why do you think it took so long to become mainstream?
Well, you know, in a lot of ways, when we look at that it's been, you know, 35 years or something like that, I think in the longer scheme of things, it's really not too long. But I do agree, like, you know, you would think maybe during the 90s, you know, one of the things I think has really accelerated it, though, and let's face it, it's accelerated a lot of things, is social media. Right? Social media and technology has given a voice more than ever to consumers to articulate how they're feeling about companies and about what they're doing. And that has become really important in terms of driving purpose within an organization. And I also think it's important to mention too, Stephen, when we talk about this, is that, you know, cause marketing is just one piece of the puzzle. Right? There are a lot of other types of buzzwords out there when we talk about how a business could work with a nonprofit or how a business could be responsible. You know, the CSR, there's purpose, there's sustainability, there's employee engagement, you know, there's all these different layers now. So in a lot of ways, you know, the cause marketing was kind of the front of house tactic, right? That businesses and nonprofits did so that they could partner with one another. But I think the difference now, Stephen, which I think is so interesting, is that, you know, when as a cause marketer, when I go into a store now and someone asks me if I want to donate a dollar, I am more than happy to give. But one of the things I often say to myself now is, what is this company doing with that dollar? Are they contributing anything to this campaign? How does this company pay its employees? How are they doing on sustainability? What about their packaging? Are they taking concerns about that? So I think in a lot of ways, like cause marketing was a linchpin to a lot of other significant issues, right? That have really developed now. So in that sense, like it's spilled over to the entire company now. And now there are lots of things that people look at. You know, 20 years ago when I was doing cause marketing, Stephen, if someone wanted to do a point of sale program at the front of the store and maybe not contribute any of their money, I would say 20 years ago, that was fine because in many ways, that's the most lucrative way to raise money for businesses. But now I would advise the business, like, look, you got, if you're going to be doing cause marketing at the register, or you're going to be selling a product that benefits, you got to have some skin in the game here. You have to make sure that consumers know that you're also giving to this campaign and that you're engaged with this organization and not just on a superficial or transactional level. Because as we know with social media, that is something that consumers can voice their pleasure or displeasure very easily, right? And I think that's what companies are so attuned to right now.
It's pretty, it's very well said. You know, it's kind of interesting. This is use case of one, but this weekend, July 4th weekend, went to the grocery store with my girlfriend and we were at checkout and they had a donate at checkout. It was to Best Buddies. And it prompted up on the screen. And I looked at it and there was nothing other than give. There was no messaging anywhere else or even on that screen of how we're going to use the money, what percent they were doing,
etc.
And I went, my thought pattern was, and this is really the first time, because usually I just opt in and I do it.
Yeah.
I had this moment there and I thought, I could just give the Best Buddies myself directly.
Right.
So you can do it. I mean, I'm honestly sharing it. And it was like, your the path that you're going down is what you have the expertise in, right? Of like really thinking down, thinking through critically, helping companies understand the psychology of the end consumer. And I'm telling you, for all the stuff that I do with Charity Chart and a lot of the stuff that I know more than the typical person in this realm, as the consumer, my gut reaction was just, I don't know that I have any faith of what's going to actually happen if I donate the dollar.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, it's interesting too. You know, what's interesting about that too, Stephen, is when we look at cause marketing in other countries, and you know, I mean, in many ways, if you want to look at something that's slow, it's you know, like cause marketing has been slow to be adopted in other countries. I mean, we can point to like Canada, the UK, Australia. I've seen campaigns in South Africa. I've seen campaigns in Brazil. But, you know, part of the challenge with cause marketing internationally is that consumers have even less faith that the money will get to the nonprofit. And you know, it's interesting, I actually had a conversation with someone in Brazil about this, and they were saying, even though we have seen cause marketing campaigns there, that a lot of people do not believe that the company is going to give the nonprofit the money or that the government is going to seize the money, right? And you know, think about that from our perspective. How many campaigns, like, you know, we talk about the erosion of trust in this country, but we certainly have a lot more trust in our institutions than what we're seeing there, that a lot of times when we give it the register or we buy a product, we do feel indeed like that money is going to a nonprofit. But this is why it's so important to preserve the integrity of cause marketing, Stephen, because if we don't do that, if we're not transparent, if we're not advocates for it in a responsible way, consumers could really turn away from it and say, you know what, I'm just going to give on my own. I'm not going to give through a business. And the power of giving through a business in many instances is consumers already have their checkbook open, right? And they're more than happy to make that donation, but they have to be confident that something is going to happen with that. And more often than not, they're asking important questions like, is the company making a donation? Am I making a donation when I should be maybe making a donation to the cashier who's making $12 an hour instead of $15 an hour, right? And so those are the types of questions I think that cause marketing has started. And it's also questions that continue today in terms of, you know, people have more questions than answers when they see these campaigns.
It's really interesting too, your comment there about the cashier, right?
Yeah.
I'm almost thinking about it in the sense of like Patreon, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and one of the things that I haven't seen this been done. I believe, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, if you know, but that for a lot of service workers, I mean, even if I just focus on like where I go to buy coffee, I'm way more because I have this feeling that, and I had, that everyone's affected, right, a lot financially by COVID. And if I can give a little bit more of a tip than I normally would, now is really the time to do that. And I really appreciate that someone's there the risk to still, you know, work their job. But
yep.
there's no way for me to, you know, on Patreon, I might contribute to creators or other people that I want them
right.
to what they're doing.
Yep. But we well, you know, what's interesting, Stephen, about what you're saying, though, is when we look at the research about what consumers really care about, yes, they want you to support nonprofits. Yes, they want businesses to support causes. But over and over again, what we see is the number one thing that they ask people to do, companies to do, is to take care of their employees.
Mm-hmm.
So in a lot of ways, you could say that charity should really start at home. And yeah. I would say that myself, that I would say, look, I would be happy to give up all the Walmart campaigns for Children's Miracle Network. And I probably shouldn't say that because I don't have any skin in the game in terms of controlling it or benefiting from those dollars, right? But I would give up all those campaigns if I felt like every employee at a Walmart was actually making what they deserve and what they need to live by. That's what's really important to me. And I think that reflects too how it's changed. And, you know, so, you know, when we think about a business supporting a cause, it's not quite as simple anymore, right? As just doing something like a transactional campaign. You have to have a lot of these other things in mind.
It's so interesting. And that is definitely like a shift in what's happening. I could go on and on about that. I want to ask, you talked about just kind of the history of it. You've talked about it to where we are. What have you been seeing happen as a result of COVID? How are some companies and nonprofits adjusting?
Yeah. Any specific right.
things you've seen that you've just gone, this is really interesting and you want to talk
about? Yeah, no, and I think it's a really tough environment right now. I think it's a really tough environment for companies because, you know, the New York Times actually published an interesting graph not too long ago where it showed these are the companies making money and these are the companies that aren't making money. And there are a lot of companies right now not making money. You can't be doing a point of sale campaign with a restaurant right now or a movie theater because they're not open or they're open in limited capacity, right? So it's really challenging to work with those people. And the businesses that are open are on the one hand, and gratefully so in some instances, focused on their employees, right, and on their customers, and focused on COVID-related causes. The challenge, I think, is that it's for those causes that are not related to either the pandemic or racial issues where, you know, I think it's a tough sled for them. Like, you know, when we look at what's going on with a lot of museums right now, right? You know, it's really challenging atmosphere. They don't have the attendance. They don't have the membership and stuff like that. They don't have the people coming through the doors. But on the other hand, there isn't an appetite from the corporate community to support these people with cause marketing programs. Now, that doesn't mean a company couldn't support, you know, these museums with a grant, with actual corporate giving. But, you know, when we look at actual corporate giving in this country, it does amount to a fair bit of money, $16 billion, but it pales in comparison, Stephen, to what is given by individuals, which is north of $400 billion, right? So when we look at that, that's where the real money is. So I think it's very challenging right now. And, you know, a lot of the clients that I'm advising right now is when I talk about corporate partnerships, if you're doing corporate partnerships right now, you've got something to focus on. And now is a good time to circle the wagons and focus on your friends, those companies that you already have within your network. But, you know, for people that are looking to expand or start a corporate partnership program right now, I think it's very hard, right? And perhaps what they need to do instead and is really focus on the things that attract companies in the first place so that when the market comes back around, and it will come back around again, those organizations will be positioned well to attract more companies that want to give back and do these types of programs. Because, you know, Stephen, the one advantage of what's happening right now is everyone is being trained on purpose and social responsibility right now, right? And so what is gonna happen is I think when businesses come out of this, even more so than it was before March 2020, people are gonna be focused more than ever in making purpose a sizable part of their business, right? And that's a silver lining in this crisis.
It's really interesting. It's really well said. So, do you think that, I'm just curious then, given how a lot of nonprofit organizations are, I don't want to say left out of cause marketing, but right, if they're not in the hot areas where people and businesses are really their support, right, on the pressing issues that are happening right now, frontline working, racial injustice. I know you mentioned it there, but let's, if they're listening, you talk about, kind of talk to them. Like if you're, a lot of the groups that we work with, for example, they're under $1 million in revenue. They're, you know, maybe they're like five or so full-time employees. I think a lot of them are scared about fundraising. What do you tell them? Some of them might just be kind of a little bit more, but talk to them.
That's right. Well, you know, in a lot of ways, when it comes to corporate partnerships, one of the things that we have to be realistic about, Stephen, is that in the larger scheme of things, most nonprofits don't raise a lot of money from corporations. I mean, my own evidence is that nonprofits in general raise about 5 to 15% from companies, okay, which is a very modest number. And you know well, too, that the real money is in individuals, right? So one of the...
I want to just mention that, you know, you mentioned a statistic, and it's somewhere around $400 billion a year that's donated total to the U.S., approximately 75% comes from individuals. The remaining 20% are corporations, foundations.
You know, it's interesting, Stephen. Do you know dead people give as much, twice as much as companies in this country? Okay, wow. So nonprofits raise more money from bequests than they do from companies. So you have to be, you have to be realistic, right, in terms of how much you can really raise with a company.
I think that that's kind of well said. Why do you think, you know, one of the things though that I see in working now, like, I mean, for longer, but in earnest, you know, we've had Charity Charge has been operating for over 4 years now. And I'm constantly baffled by working and interacting with nonprofits that obviously they have a heart for it. They have a real passion for it, but they seem like they have no fundraising strategy in general.
Right.
And I think they're writing down a lot of them thinking that companies have all the money, but at the end of the day, they're realizing that they're not getting a return there. And I think it's the kind of what you're pointing out is, I mean, also the numbers just don't lie. I mean, the math just says.
That's right. And so, you know, nonprofits should be focused on individuals in general. Okay. That should be the most important thing that they're doing. And then the next thing when it comes to companies is they should definitely be looking at low-lying fruit, right? So what, you know, if you have an individual base of people that are given to your organization, you should be knowing that person's name, address, phone number, email address, and where do you work, right? Yeah. And I would argue to start with those people, right? Because those people can help leverage those organizations depending on where they are in the organization. They can be anywhere in the organization and still do a matching gift program, right? So I think it's really important for nonprofits to focus on the basics when it comes to corporate partnerships. Focus on the money in front of you, right? The important thing, though, in terms of building relationships with companies, and this is important, Stephen, I argue that companies are... look to audiences to tell them what is good, profitable, and popular in this world. So what nonprofits should really be focused on is audience building. Building an engaged group of people that care about their organization and that they communicate with on a regular basis, right? When you do that, what you'll find is that companies are attracted to organizations that have strong audiences. And I'll give you just, I'll give you a couple examples. One great example is after the Super Bowl, we had a Kansas City lineman do a great deed for the Kansas City Animal Shelter. He offered to pay for 100 adoptions from that animal shelter. Now, seeing what he was doing and seeing the press that he got out of that, Rachel Ray, who by the way makes dog food, right, as owns her own dog food company, came in and said, hey, I'm gonna feed all those dogs for a year. This is what I want to do for her, right? She went to that audience. And then Coors Light came in and said, you guys are doing 100 adoptions. We're going to do 1,000 adoptions nationwide. So it's a great example in terms of like in the world in general, companies look for audiences. What a lot of companies are doing right now in terms of funding racial causes and then also funding pandemic causes is they're rushing to the audience, right? Where are the people right now, right? And what I would say is in less dire times, they are still looking for audiences to work with them. And, you know, companies, organizations that have strong audiences, and I always use the example, you know, in my newsletter, Stephen, of the National Audubon Society, which in the past 6 years has done a tremendous job growing its audience from 35,000 people to well over a million. They now raise $25 million more because of that. And they've also had some great partnerships with Allbirds, for example, where Allbirds has made a line of shoes. They promoted that shoe to their members, and in less than a week, they sold out on that shoe. And then I saw over Memorial Day, they were doing a special campaign with Costco and selling a special line of National Audubon trees. So what National Audubon is saying to companies is like, look, we have an audience that cares deeply about what we do, and they want to support what we do, and we have access to those people, and we have a channel to communicate with them about that. So I think a nonprofit on any level should be thinking about how they can grow that fan base. You know, there's a great book out there now by David Nierman Scott, who coined the word newsjacking. He's got with another book called Fanocracy that he wrote with his daughter. And it's a great story about how companies and organizations are focusing on fans and getting people really and super engaged in what we do. And when you do that, Stephen, you attract people to what you're doing. You just don't attract companies too. You attract individuals and you attract foundations to what you do because you're becoming popular and you have an audience that you can share with those people. That's very powerful.
I love it. And I think it's really important to focus on how linear, in a sense, you broke that down.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Certainly over the years, I mean, we've been asked by nonprofit after nonprofit after nonprofit for us to donate to their gala, for example.
Yeah, right.
It's not that there needs to be an offer, but yeah, we have resources. I would go out of right. business and donate. I mean, already what yeah. we do there to help the nonprofit. Yeah. I've always thought it's kind of like interesting that they're hitting us up specifically for a cash.
Right.
Like, if you want to work with us, the product's there. Like,
that's right. Yeah. For, right.
It's different than a typical. But then you see, you know, I've been to nonprofit event after nonprofit event where, you know, someone paid $5,000 to $50,000 and their name is just up a little banner that's like off in the corner. And you got to think, you know, that can't be sustainable.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. And, you know, you're a great example of that, too, in the sense what Charity Charge is looking for is they're looking for organizations that have good, large audiences that are engaged that they can share the message of Charity Charge to, right? And they can get people to use those things. And that makes a powerful case for you, too, to be focused on an audience like that.
And with a little bit kind of just, I don't know that I was trying to make a subtle transition, but what I wanted to bring up, because as we were talking about all of this, I was thinking about an email message. I'm not going to name names here, but there was a gentleman who I'm trying to pull up, who had reached out to us. I want to kind of go the other end of this, which is the spectrum of apps or companies out there that are trying to do the fundraising on behalf of the nonprofit. So you've seen a who's like emerging, and you've seen maybe more than I have, but giving apps or these programs where they're basically trying to get people to donate through their app or product. And Charity Charge would be one of those, right? If you think about our consumer card, where you use the consumer card, you earn donations, and then the Charity Charge platform and system sends that to your nonprofit.
Right.
And so I'm trying to think of the right way to explain it, because it's, you could call it cause marketing, but it's really not. It's the emergence of people that are trying to think, hey, here's a way to make it easier for people to give. And virtually all of these have failed, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And I want to kind of dive in just because we're on here. Yeah, and
because you know why, Stephen, you know, in the larger scheme of things, they feel because they don't have an audience, right? That's in a sense, like, you know, they're not capable. You know, a lot of times they're going to people saying, you know, I want you to be part of my audience, but you don't have an audience already. So why should I be part of it, right? So it's kind of a double-edged sword. That's what makes things like GoFundMe so remarkable, right? When you do see someone who is successful in that space and can actually build an audience around what they're doing, that's what makes it so impressive. But as you and I know, they're the exception, not the rule.
Exactly. And so this, you know, you hit it right on the head there. I mean, and I'm even looking that it was a guy, he emailed both of us, and the subject line was uncanny business similarities, different product. And he went on talking about how, you know, he has this idea, he wants to launch it, and, you know, that's a similar business. And I said, you know, do you have a one-page document or anything you could share? And he basically shared, you know, a model where, you know, he just wanted to basically become that gateway. And I have the email pulled up, realizing that I'm going off on a little bit of a tangent here.
Yeah.
But I want to give you know, just relate on this, because I have a lot of entrepreneurs, social entrepreneurs that reach out to me that want to be something in this space. And part of my feedback to this person also was, does the organization really need you? And what I found is that, look, if you're a huge supermarket and you have documented that you have X, you know, potentially, I don't even know what the numbers would be, but hundreds of thousands of people checking out at your store every month. Millions if you're a national chain, that's really valuable. Cause like, again, to your business, you have that audience, but so many nonprofits get hit up by these new giving apps. And I have entrepreneur after entrepreneur say to me, oh, well, this is going to be so easy and a slam dunk because we're going to partner with this nonprofit and they have 30,000 people on their newsletter. And they're going to tell them, like, everyone's going to sign up and get the app. The reality is it never works.
Never. And you know, I mean, in a lot of ways too, what they don't say is, they got 30,000 people on their email list. You know, 20,000 of those people have been on the email list for 10 years and they've never opened an email from them. Right. Yeah. And they actually have a really small audience to actually target. And now you have to go out there and get not just one or two or three nonprofits. You need to go out there and go after hundreds of nonprofits. And a lot of these people just don't have the time to scale in that way before they run out of money or worse, run out of interest, right? In the project.
Yeah. And you see, and my feedback for people that are following along, I mean, we started it with that consumer product, and it was the consumer product that gave us the insight to launch the business card for the nonprofits themselves. So, I mean, my time, my team's time is spent just really forming relationships with executive directors, or if it's a larger group with the CFO or CEO of a nonprofit that evaluates our business card versus using a card from Amex or Wells Fargo or Chase. And, you know, once they become aware of our value proposition, they'll make the switch to Charity Charge, but they're using it as a B2B product. They're using it internally for the nonprofit.
That's right.
Yep. And that's where we found a repeatable way to get in the door, educate the nonprofit, and create margins for them and for us. You know,
that's right.
Consumer side, I just realized I never wanted to scale that. And in the future, I'd love to pull that off the shelf, but I'm getting a massive war chest of dollars to market it.
Yeah.
I would not be marketing it through the channel of the nonprofit. I mean, I would.
That's right. Yeah. And, you know, that's a, you know, how many calls do you and I get where people say, and you say, well, how are you going to get people to market this? And it's like, oh, I'm going to have the nonprofit market it. And it's like, the nonprofit isn't good at marketing. So you're going to put marketing in the hands of the nonprofit that doesn't know how to market, or in many instances, Stephen, has no resources for marketing. Right. So even if they want to market themselves, they really don't have the ability to do this. And, you know, this is actually something that I'm confronting a lot of nonprofits now with, is like talking about the need and the importance of having marketing with the organization and not viewing marketing as a cost, but as an investment, as something that you can have a return on. Right. That actually drives your business. And this is very challenging for nonprofits because they have program people, they have fundraisers, but they don't have marketing people. And people ask me all the time, Stephen, what's the challenge with nonprofits? Why is it so hard for now? They don't have marketing. You know, if they need more marketing in order to be effective, because, you know, as Peter Drucker has said, marketing makes sales unnecessary, or good marketing, I should say, makes sales unnecessary. So what I would say from that is good marketing, if you're doing marketing well, it makes fundraising unnecessary because the marketing does the fundraising for you. But in order to do that, you need to invest time, resources, expertise, all these different things. And nonprofits just aren't set up that way. The nonprofits that are, and I think we can probably, between the two of us, probably identify a dozen of them that are doing this very well from Charity Water onward, is they're really thinking about how to market themselves, right? And how do we do this effectively? Whether, you know, we're using social media or whether we're using influencers, you know, how we're talking about our impact, all those different things. You know, I think that's something that's really important that needs to be addressed by nonprofits. And when this current crisis is over, I'm hoping that more foundations will take the step up with nonprofits and say, you know what, you need help, you know, with your operations. You know, you need to be a more solid organization. And one way we're going to do that is by investing in marketing for your organization.
That is really a great point. And that is really well said, you know? And
yeah.
I think I agree with you completely, you know, on that. And I appreciate you sharing that point. I appreciate what you're doing with Selfish Giving, which people are interested in learning more, getting on your newsletter, they can go to Selfish Giving. Right? Is there any other place where people could, or you would suggest people learn more about you and what you're doing? And
well, I'm very active on Twitter, and people, you know, can visit me there. I'm always happy to engage with people. You know, as someone who is a one-person team, I try to really focus my attention on a couple of forums, and you know, that place is really with, you know, my newsletter, which you can find at selfishgiving.com, and then, you know, on Twitter. And the good thing is that when you write to me, whether it's on Twitter or whether it's email, I will get back to you. And you know, I'm very responsive in getting back to people and talking to people. And that's the way I want, because I want people to know that I'm a real person just like them, and I'm interested in what they're doing. And, you know, one of the things I've actually been doing the past couple of weeks, Stephen, is talking to a lot of people who are simply out of work, and seeing how I can be helpful in that regard, and also offering Selfish Giving as a forum, as a place where people can come and talk about the things that they're good at so that they can get in front of people that may be doing some hiring.
That's awesome. Good for you.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
It's really like sometimes I think it's unselfish giving, you know?
That's right. Well, you know, remember too, one of the things I always try to educate people on is selfish giving is not about being selfish. You know, the Dalai Lama talks about this. He talks about, you know, wise selfish and dumb selfish. And dumb selfish is when you only focus on yourself and you ultimately fail because you can't get people to support what you're doing. Wise selfish is when you realize that to be successful, you should give as much as you can to other people, and you will all be successful because of it. So in a much broader way, Stephen, we're really trying to redefine what selfishness means. And it's a Herculean task, as you can imagine, but you know, something we think about a lot.
No, I love it. You know, and I got to thank you because, you know, I've been doing, obviously with COVID, a lot of reflecting, and the best part about these past 4+ years of Charity Charge is the people that I've been able to meet and interact with, and you're really one of them. So
yeah. Well, thank you.
Thank you for being a friend. Thank you for doing what you're doing. It's always, I appreciate having a relationship with you. I hope to grow it, you know, for many, many years to come. And it's a really helpful resource. A lot of the things that I've learned have just been by following along and feeling like once a week
good.
I can read a newsletter and just get something out of it.
Awesome.
I sincerely mean that. So thank you for.
Yeah. Well, no, thank you. I'm right back at you. And I really appreciate it too. You know, I wish that you and I were more similar in our hair, because I want to have as much hair as you and, you know, to have these locks, but it's not my fortune. So we have to share other things, and it has to be a common interest and a common knowledge, right?
Thank you for saying that. That's appreciative. And Joe's not paid to say that. we'll keep these loose. So we'll wrap up this episode of the Charity Charge Show with Joe Waters from Selfish Giving, selfishgiving.com. Thanks so much for being a part of it, Joe.
Nice to be here.